Just before you start listening to this podcast, a reminder that we have a special subscription offer. You can get 12 issues of The Spectator for £12, as well as a £20 Amazon voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher if you'd like to get this offer.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by Katie Bors and James Forsyth. So last night could well have been a turning point in this election campaign. BBC presenter Andrew Neil interviewed Jeremy Corbyn in what was a pretty painful half an hour interview. Here's what Corbyn had to say.
I mean, wouldn't you like to take this opportunity tonight to apologise to the British Jewish community for what's happened?
What I'll say is this. I am determined that our society will be safe for people of all faiths. I don't want anyone to be feeling insecure in our society. And our government will protect every community.
So no apology.
Against the abuse they receive on the streets, on the trains, or in any other...
So no apology for how you handle
this. Any other form of life.
Try one more time.
No, hang on a minute, Andrew. Can I explain what we're trying to do?
You have, and you've been given plenty of time to do it. I asked you if you wanted to apologise.
Andrew,
and you
I
haven't.
Don't want anyone to go through what anyone has
and
gone through.
You've said that several times. I understand that, Mr. Corbyn. I was asking you about an apology. Let's move on to Brexit.
Well, hang on. Can I just make it clear? Racism in our society is a total poison.
You've said that several times. So, you know, we get that. I'm not arguing
be
about
it
that.
Be it Islamophobia, anti-Semitism, or any other form of racism. And I want to work with every community to make sure it's eliminated.
Right.
That is
that
what
clear.
My whole life has
you
been
made
about.
You made that clear, and people will make up their own minds.
Katie, that clip that we just played of Corbyn refusing to apologise is just stereotypical of how the entire interview went. I mean, how important do you think this interview would be for the final result?
It was a really bad interview for Jeremy Corbyn. I think it was probably his worst interview of the campaign. And I think that you could probably say it ranks in the worst since he has been Labour leader. I think it's a different question on how much impact it has. We know the viewing figures last night were around 3 million. I'm told by Twitter, reliable source of news, is higher than the X Factor on
wow.
Saturday. But since then, obviously, people are sharing a lot of clips. Yeah. It's getting a lot of traction. Because I think there is a question which is, are the people watching this interview people who've already made up their minds? Or are you reaching your undecideds? Is it going to change minds? And I imagine it will change some, I suppose, in the course as it is shared more widely, and also some who saw it to begin with. I think that on anti-Semitism, what was interesting is that Jeremy Corbyn has apologised in the past on various occasions when I think the pressure has got too much on his party and its handling. So You did feel it wouldn't have been that difficult for him to just do so again.
It sort of came across like he just had that one line that he was just trying to finish his sentence, and so he didn't apologise before he finished his line. Was he too vetted for this interview?
Well, I think there were points when it seemed as though Jeremy Corbyn kept saying, you know, I want to say this, but he wasn't always saying things that corresponded to the question he was being asked. So there's anti-Semitism, for example, and I do think that lots of voters already believe Jeremy Corbyn's party has an anti-Semitism problem. This probably doubles down on that. There's a question of whether it moves votes, whether or not that is right or wrong on that issue. I thought it was interesting when you talk about Jeremy Corbyn's responses to questions when he was repeatedly asked by Andrew Neil about how his party would pay for the WASPI pledge. So to give women who feel they've been discriminated against or who have been discriminated against with pension ages changing, how they would get that relief which has been promised. And it's it's a lot of billions of pounds that would be required. The suggestion that you would need to borrow more to do that. Jeremy Corbyn didn't really have an answer. Instead, he just kept talking about how it's the right thing to do. Now, I think that if you look at all the polling out there on the focus group feedback, there is a sense amongst lots of voters that they do think Jeremy Corbyn's heart is in the right place on a lot of domestic issues like the NHS. And I think this is probably another example where I don't think people doubt Jeremy Corbyn would like to give lots of people money, particularly on things that he thinks they really deserve. It's whether or not he can do it. Mm. And I think repeatedly saying, oh, would get it from the reserves or would borrow, but actually this isn't what it's about, just does add to that, I think, that idea that ultimately Labour are making a lot of promises right now. And are they actually going to be able to fulfil them all while only taxing the top 5%? And Jeremy Corbyn also in this interview admitted that it wouldn't just be the top 5% because of the marriage allowance. So he did admit that others would have to face some, you know, tax, well, not necessarily tax rise, but, you know, have to pay for these changes. And he said, well, it'd be fine because overall these people would be better off thanks to other things we're bringing in. But I think it did undermine the argument so much on the economy.
Yeah, and Katie, on that competency point, there's a poll out today by YouGov in the Times, which says that 56% of voters don't believe that Jeremy Corbyn can deliver his funding pledges. James, one of the other things that came up during this interview was Jeremy Corbyn's views on how to deal with terrorists and what to do if he were in a situation like Trump was earlier this year with al-Baghdadi. What did he say to that, and what do you make of his answer?
He went on a long, convoluted answer about how we have to decide who funds, to determine who funds ISIS, who is responsible for their rise, when I think probably all the viewers at home wanted to hear him say is, I'll do whatever is necessary to keep this country safe. I thought the interview was appalling for Jeremy Corbyn on several levels. First of all, on anti-Semitism, he appeared unempathetic. As Katie says, the Labour Party have previously apologised for what's happened, and he appeared to be in denial. I mean, I think it is remarkable for him to say that the problem hasn't got worse since he became party leader. I don't think if we were doing this podcast when Ed Miliband was Labour leader, we didn't spend lots of time discussing it, because it wasn't. Now, you can make the argument that some people do, but it's because Jeremy Corbyn has turned it into a mass membership party that you've got more people in, and so therefore your chances of getting people with Looney Tunes views are higher. But that was denial to say that. It made him appear mean-spirited that he wouldn't apologise. Mm. I think in terms of the fiscal stuff, I agree with Katie that not only is he admitting that some people who are earning less than 80,000 are going to have to pay more tax, and isn't being clear about how he would pay for this WASPI pledge, I also just thought his lack of knowledge was quite terrifying, actually, to be honest. To not understand that a government bond, issuing government bonds, increases the government's debt. Yeah, I mean, that would be alarming from a junior member of his shadow cabinet. I think in terms of changing minds, I think the big impact I suspect that this will have is it again creates another obstacle to tactical voting. We discussed on the podcast the other day how Corbyn is right, the biggest obstacle to that. And if you think about those Remain people who might currently be voting Lib Dem, probably tend to be quite high information voters, this just makes it that much harder to say to them, oh, go out and vote for Jeremy Corbyn's candidate, it's all fine. And I think that is where this is creating a problem for Labour, which is, you know, it is remarkable that, you know, that his position on his neutral position on the Brexit referendum, which didn't exactly come out of his interview brilliantly. We haven't even mentioned that yet because there were so many other things to discuss. But I do think it is harder now to imagine that Labour are going to be able to squeeze that Liberal Democrat vote down as much as they need to deny the Tories a majority. Now, I think they will squeeze it down a bit more, but I think that their ability to squeeze it right down, and the way the Tories have squeezed the Brexit Party vote right down, has definitely been limited by this interview.
Sure. And Katie, possibly in reaction to how badly last night went, Jeremy Corbyn this morning is making some pretty extraordinary claims about a secret plot, his words not mine, to sell out the NHS. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so this relates to a dossier of official documents that they've got hold of. So I don't think it's completely on the spot in reaction to last night, but ultimately Jeremy Corbyn is trying to get back on the front and it's an attack line we've heard since the election was first called, and probably actually a bit before that, which is Jeremy Corbyn and his party suggesting that the NHS would be privatised or would have privatisation as part of it if you had a Boris Johnson government. And the reason for this, they say, is because there'd be a US-UK trade deal and the NHS would be part of this. Now, Donald Trump wants to suggest that everything would be on the table, but he then very quickly backtracked and said it would not be on the table. So you can see why they think there's a bit of space. Now, the documents that he was waving around at this launch were redacted, so we don't have the full details, but it's 451 pages, and Corbyn says that they leave Boris Johnson's denials in absolute tatters and show that NHS is on the table and will be up for sale. Now, what it relates to is the fact there have been talks between UK and US officials. That was first revealed by, I think, Channel 4 dispatches investigation, but those on both sides have been very quick since then to say this isn't about, you know, privatising the NHS, as we've said before, this isn't part of it. I think the trade talk documents do show the US seeking much longer drug patents, which in theory could raise the cost of more drugs because it means fewer companies could start making those drugs. So that's one thing they're latching on to. We're yet to hear the Tory response to this, but I'm pretty sure they'll say this is a complete fiction and it's not on the table, so we might just keep going round and round. But I do think that if you were to think of anything which could perhaps change the narrative or change the race for Labour right now, if, as we're beginning to think, they're not going to be able to pitch themselves as the pro-EU option to some Liberal Democrat voters, the NHS is an issue which, if you look at what voters care about most in this election, NHS, Brexit, go up and down, they're level pegging most of the time. So if you can latch onto that and suggest that Tories cannot be trusted with the NHS, you can see how that would be very good for Labour in terms of their electoral chances.
James, how should the Tories respond to this? I mean, if they say outright reject these claims, I mean, do they create a stick to beat themselves with later on in trade negotiations where the NHS or parts of these drug companies' access to the UK market may actually be on the table? Or do you think it's utterly impossible?
I think they are going to say, you know, as Liz Truss, the Trade Secretary, has already said, you know, if you have to increase the drugs budget for the NHS because of this trade deal, we won't do the deal. Now, I think that Corbyn has played quite a clever bit of sleight of hand here, because let's imagine that we had a discussion about, you know, you paying us for appearing on this podcast. And Katie said,
"You wish.
I want £500 an episode." And that was recorded in the minute.
I thought that conversation was private.
And that was recorded in the minutes of the meeting. That wouldn't mean that you had agreed to pay Katie £500 an episode. It's an ask. And that's not the same as person agreeing it. So the minutes of these meetings say the US asked for a longer patent on longer patents on drugs. But that is not the same as saying that the UK has accepted that ask. So I think, you know, we are going to see more and more of this. Labour, as Katie said, desperately need to change the conversation. And they need something to give themselves momentum. Because, you know, if you look at where they are now, they need to, if they are going to carry, there has been a bit of tightening in the polls, and if they're going to carry that on, they need to basically be winning the news cycle pretty much every day between now and December 12th. I think it is fair to say that yesterday they did not win the news cycle, a combination of the chief rabbi's intervention and that disastrous interview. And I think so the question now becomes, you know, can this, as Katie said, can this change the conversation of the election back to, you know, on December the 11th, will people think there are 24 hours to save the NHS from Donald Trump? I think that Labour will also be hoping that Donald Trump's presence in London for the NATO summit will kind of give this story legs, because Trump will get asked about it. And you can't always be, it is always fairly a safe bet that Donald Trump will say something newsworthy when asked a question. I struggle, though, to see that this is quite the game changer that people think. Because it is, first of all, this isn't, and we're going to sell you the Royal Free Hospital. It's, you know, a question about drugs prices. And secondly, I think the government answer would be just wouldn't do the deal is not a bad one. I think if these secret documents said, you know, some US company is going to pay X million to take over a chain of NHS hospitals, that would be a slightly different proposition. I think this is, and then I think the fundamental problem is lots of people compare this to Vote Leave talking about Turkey joining the EU.
Right.
But it's an equivalent electoral tactic. I think there is a difference, though, which is that Vote Leave had the fact that it was UK government policy that Turkey should join the EU, that gave the claim a credence, which was, it was, you know, the hypocrisy in a way was that the government policy was to say that it wanted Turkey to join the EU while doing very little to facilitate that. But it was still officially government policy. It is not currently officially government policy to sell the NHS off to the United States. And so I think for that, I don't think the charge has that traction. Because what the Turkey argument in the referendum campaign had was enough truth to work.
Yeah.
I don't think this has that crucial backing in fact to keep going. You know,
what about the counter that people critical of Boris Johnson often make, which is that, you know, Big Pharma is such a big lobbying force in the state. You know, if Congress really wants a trade deal with us, they will be lobbied to give them access to our market. So it's not necessarily government policy, but it's just the way the cookie will crumble.
Well, what I would say to that is we don't currently have a trade deal with the United States. And I think if you got into a situation where if you kind of wanted to carry on down that line, where this was going to make drugs massively more expensive for the UK, it wouldn't be in the UK's political interest to sign the deal. This is what I've never understood about this argument that the Tories are going to privatise the NHS. Do you really think that if the Tories replaced the NHS with a private insurance-based model, they would then win the election that would follow that? No. And so they're not going to do anything like that. And I think this is, you know, I think we haven't had proper conversations about trade policy in this country for 40 years. And so I think all of these trade deals are going to become controversial. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, I mean, there's a reason why we will probably start off with New Zealand, Australia and Canada. These are slightly harder countries that they don't quite, you know, they're not the same as the big bogeyman of the US, and they're slightly simpler deals to do. But I don't buy his argument that, you know, the UK will have no choice but to sign this deal, whatever the US says, because we don't currently have a trade deal with the US. So it's not like we've got to do this to get back to where we are now.
And Katie, finally, James mentioned momentum there for Labour just now, and it seems that they're not doing incredibly well on that front. What about for the Tories? Do they need as much momentum? Do they risk the lead narrowing, as you guys were talking about on the podcast yesterday?
Well, I think they'd need to basically keep the show on the road around the level it is at, and they need Labour not to rise too much. And were Labour to rise, then the Tories would also need to work out how they can get their vote across. I think it's interesting that you have Boris Johnson in the southwest, where there are lots of Tory Lib Dem marginals. Now, I think the Tories feel as though they have done a good job at uniting a Leave vote, but things are going to be tight depending how this falls. I think there is a chance that you have a comfortable Tory majority. I think there's still a chance that things just fall a little bit short and you potentially could have a hung parliament, because if you have the 7-point lead we were talking about yesterday, it gets quite difficult to know if that gets you over the line or not. So I think it's interesting they're visiting South West, which is ultimately where they feel they need to keep these seats and stop the Lib Dems from taking off them to help with their numbers. And you've also recently had, he listened to the airwaves, had Matt Hancock on quite a lot, Nicky Morgan, and I think that is very much aimed at trying to push the One Nation conservative agenda rather than, well, Jacob Rees-Mogg has gone missing clearly, but rather than having some of the more probably Brexiteer candidates like Priti Patel out there, I think they feel that they've done one half and now it's about kind of zoning in on the other. And I think we'll probably have a good idea where we're at, probably, but not if you are Fraser and don't like to listen to pollsters, when we have YouGov's first MRP poll, which
is out tonight.
Yes, and we will have Marcus Roberts from YouGov joining us to talk about it on tomorrow's podcast.
Yep, thanks Katie and thanks James. And as James mentioned, there is a NATO summit next week where Donald Trump will be visiting. And if you want to hear more about how that could change the election calculus, do tune in to our weekly podcast, The Edition, where I will be speaking to Sir Christopher Mayer, former ambassador to Washington, and Kate Andrews on what could happen then. Thanks for listening and join us again tomorrow.